Radio Prague News.
Brno is to transfer the Tugendhat Villa to the state so it can be returned to its original owners. The best-selling novelist Eva Herzikova has died at the age of 71. And ski jumper Jan Mazok has been released from hospital in Poland 10 days after crashing badly during a competition. The Brno City Council has agreed to transfer the Tugendhat Villa to the state. The move is intended to facilitate the return of the important modernist building to its original owners, the Tugendhat family. The Tugendhats, who are Jewish, lost the villa when they fled Czechoslovakia in 1938 ahead of the Nazis. The family says the building, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, will remain open to the public. The best-selling Czech novelist Eva Herzikova has died at the age of 71. Police said she took her own life last Saturday, but have released no further details. The author wrote over 20 novels and short story collections in a career spanning 5 decades. Eva Herzikova is perhaps best known for Pět holek na krku, or 5 Bad Girls, which was made into a successful film in 1967. The Czech ski jumper Jan Mazok has been released from hospital in Krakow, 10 days after crashing badly in a World Cup event in Poland. Mazok, who had been put into an artificial coma to limit damage to his brain, has been transferred to a hospital in the Czech Republic. A medical official at the hospital in Poland said there was no reason he couldn't ski again if his rehab went as expected. The number of murders in the Czech Republic increased last year. According to figures released by the police on Wednesday, there were 231 murders in the country in 2006, up from 186 during the previous 12 months. Police solved 170 cases. The overall crime rate fell slightly. A Czech man who spent 8 years in jail in Thailand for heroin smuggling has died. Radek Hanikovic was transferred to a prison in the Czech Republic, along with another convicted drug smuggler in 2004. He was released the following year for health reasons and toured schools warning pupils of the dangers of drugs. The weather. Forecasters have warned of more gale force winds around the country, and it should be partly cloudy with rain or snow in places over the next couple of days. My name is Ian Willoughby. You'll find more stories at radio.cz. But for now, that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague. I'm Pavla Horáková. Today, will the UNESCO-listed Tugendhat Villa finally be returned to its original owners? New hope for non-smokers to breathe fresh air in public places. The number of HIV-positive people is on the rise in the Czech Republic. And later on, we introduce Aleš Březina, the composer of the musical score to Jiří Menzel's new film, I Serve the King of England. Stay with us. The city of Brno has relented. Brno City Council on Tuesday approved a plan to return the Villa Tugendhat, a UNESCO landmark, to the children of the original owners. The path to giving back the historic villa, however, won't be so simple, as Ilya Maritz reports.
It didn't take long. 3 weeks ago, 3 adult children of Fritz and Greta Tugendhat began legal proceedings to reclaim the house which still carries their family name. The city of Brno, the current legal owner of the 1,200-square-meter home, responded that it would do everything in its power to retain the property. Now, though, the city says it will give up the villa, in a bureaucratic procedure that's a bit complicated. Jiří Šebela is the city's spokesman.
Zastupitelé města Brna rozhodli, že rada města Brna...
The city council of Brno has decided to prepare paperwork for the transfer of the deed to the villa, to the Czech state, so that the Czech state could, in compliance with the law, return the villa to the Tugendhat family.
A lawyer for the Tugendhat family, Augustin Kohotek, believes it could be a matter of months before the villa is back in the Tugendhat family's hands.
We are basically happy that the request was not refused and rejected. And we are also happy by the fact that the city expressed opinion that the villa should be returned to the family. And now we think that there must be certain legal technicalities and issues solved in order to make the entire process occur.
Kohoutek cautions that the return of the villa is not yet certain, and the position of the Czech government is still unknown. Throughout the 1990s, the Tugendhat family had declined to reclaim the functionalist house, which was built for them by the architect Ludwig Mies van der Rohe, and which they occupied for 8 years until the Nazi occupation of Czechoslovakia forced the family, who are Jewish, to flee. In recent years, the villa's foundation had begun to crack, while the planned restoration of the building got bogged down in a scandal-ridden bidding process. Zdeněk Lukáš of the National Heritage Department in the office of the President of the Czech Republic welcomes the decision.
I hope that something like a foundation for restoration of the Tugendhat villa will be established again, because something like a foundation was established in the early 90s to collect more money, and it's also a possibility to collaborate with some institutions like, for instance, UNESCO or World Monuments Fund.
The Tugendhats have already said they do not intend to live in the house, but want to keep it open to the public. Property disputes are not new to the villa. In 1993, Czech and Slovak leaders met there to discuss the division of state assets resulting from the breakup of Czechoslovakia.
This week has been a good one for Czech anti-smoking campaigners. On Tuesday, the High Court in Brno supported a lawsuit taken by one tenant in an apartment building to ban his neighbours from smoking on the stairwells and corridors. It is a ruling that has for the first time backed the right of non-smokers to prevent people lighting up in their environment. Now a proposed new law is to come before Parliament, which aims to make it harder to smoke in public places. Colleen O'Connor has the details.
In a week when EU Health Commissioner Marcos Cipriano has called for a blanket ban on smoking in public places across Europe, some politicians in the Czech Republic are gearing up to introduce tougher smoking legislation. Although public places like bars and restaurants here are obliged to have separate smoking areas, these are often right beside smoking zones, which means in effect that non-smokers are not protected from the risks of passive smoking. One of the people tabling the new draft law is Civic Democrat MP Boris Szczasny. He says the proposed amendment is geared to remove the obvious deficiencies in the present smoking legislation.
The main shortcomings include the fact that non-smokers aren't protected against the harm caused by passive smoking in public areas, particularly bars, restaurants and other hostelries. We're trying to ensure that non-smoking areas are separated by a wall, and that these places have better ventilation. In this way, smokers can still go to these places, while at the same time non-smokers are protected.
Other improvements in the proposed law include giving local authorities discretionary powers to ban smoking in places like children's playgrounds and sports halls. It should also ban smoking in any enclosed public spaces like train station waiting rooms. Although previous attempts to tighten up smoking legislation have failed, this particular proposal does appear to have enough cross-party support in Parliament to be passed when it's tabled. Anti-smoking campaigners welcome the proposed change, but argue that it doesn't go far enough. Dr. Eva Králíková is one of the Czech Republic's leading experts on smoking-related illnesses.
It's better law than we have, and it should go further, because this proposal contains the possibility to keep smoking in extra rooms in restaurants. But if we have some divided spaces for smokers in our restaurants, then anyway, some waitress has to be there and enter this carcinogenic room and space, so smoking should be banned because of them.
Boris Szczasny says that if the proposed law is properly implemented, it should both facilitate smokers, who make up about one-third of the Czech population, whilst also maximising the safety of non-smokers. Campaigners like Eva Králíková, however, maintain that until more comprehensive anti-smoking legislation, like the law that exists in Ireland, for example, is introduced across Europe, passive smoking will continue to be a major health hazard.
Passive smoking causes diseases and death. It's about more than 1,000 non-smokers who die each year in the Czech Republic because of passive smoking. It's almost 80,000 people dying because of passive smoking within European Union. It's about 300 employees in the restaurant industry dying in European Union each year. Each working day, one is dying because of the exposition to passive smoking.
Dr. Eva Králíková ending that report by Colleen O'Connor. The number of people infected with the HIV virus in the Czech Republic increased significantly last year. According to the National Reference Laboratory for AIDS, 2006 saw the highest number of new cases since 1985. Of the 93 newly registered patients last year, 10 had full-blown AIDS. The latest figures suggest that a total of 920 people in the Czech Republic have HIV or AIDS, of whom just about one half, 464, live in Prague. Dita Asiedu discussed the problem with Dr. Maria Brúčková, the head of the National Reference Laboratory for AIDS.
It's quite understandable that these HIV positives are concentrated in the capital because they have many opportunities here, the citizens, to get infected. We have here, quite a big gay population, and also the foreigners are just coming to visit these gay clubs and so on. So it's quite understandable that it's here this way as it is. I cannot compare it to other countries.
Looking at what has been causing the virus to spread, the most common causes, because you mentioned the gay community, the homosexual community, are there not any other reasons here?
In general, the main mode of transmission, the main transmission category, as we say, is sexual contact. And it counts for more than 85% of all HIV positives, so sexual contact. And if we just compare hetero and homosexual, so homosexual is responsible for almost 55% of all registered cases. Also, what factor which can play a role is this more social contacts. If you are living in the country, you don't have so many social contacts as you have here in Prague, of course. And the other one, I think, is this anonymity of a big city.
The number of new cases that we found, we registered last year, has been a record number since 1985.
That's true. It was 25% rise. And this year, we are also going slowly up. We have this increase in newly diagnosed cases, 3.3%.
What is causing this rise?
I think it might be one of the reasons that the people don't take too much care about this disease more. It's here, we know about it, but we don't take too much care, we don't protect ourselves, because we know that this disease can be treated. Especially young people, they don't see more what the previous generation saw, the people dying of AIDS. Now these people dying of AIDS are somewhere in the corner. Nobody takes care of them. They are not seen.
Dita Asiedu was talking to Dr. Maria Brúčková. Now, yesterday we reported on a shortage of tone wood, which has for centuries been harvested in South Bohemia to make pianos that even Mozart himself played in Vienna. Today we bring you the sound of a piano which Mozart actually played in Prague. This is the authentic sound of a hammer piano that Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart played in Prague 220 years ago.
Na tento klavír hrál Mozart při své první návštěvě Prahy v roce 1787.
Mozart played this piano during his first visit to Prague in 1787. It was at his public performance in a young ladies' institute, a sort of school for noble women. He was accompanying a young woman from the Sternberg family who sang. This event is commemorated by a plaque that was later attached on the instrument.
Says Dagmar Fialová, director of the Czech Museum of Music in Prague, where the instrument can be seen from now on. The museum has owned the piano since the 1950s, and for years it was displayed at the Bertramka mansion, where Mozart stayed during his visits to Prague. Since it was in bad repair, the museum commissioned its restoration, which was completed last year.
Klavír byl takovým poměrně jako...
It was in a poor state, so we sent it to Vienna, where it was repaired by the Austrian restorer Albrecht Czernin under the supervision of musical instrument historian Alfons Huber.
Za odborného dohledu docenta Hubera.
The restorers found out the piano can be more than a mute exhibit. It can still play because its structure is stable and the soundboard is in good condition. Yet the mechanical parts are very frail, so the piano gets out of tune after some 15 minutes of playing. The 2-meter mahogany piano on four legs was made around 1785 in the workshop of the Viennese piano maker Franz Christoph, which makes it even more unique since only 3 instruments by Christoph have been preserved to this day.
Tento nástroj je zvláštní a vzácný tím, že se...
This instrument is also special because it has remained in a nearly authentic state. Compared to the famous Mozart grand piano displayed in Salzburg, most of the strings of our instrument are original.
Je na něm většina původního ostrunění.
Are listening to Radio Prague. Time now for our bi-weekly feature Czechs Today. This week Rob Cameron talks to Aleš Březina, composer of the musical score to Jiří Menzel's latest film I Served the King of England.
That music will be familiar to those of you who have seen Jiří Menzel's new film I Served the King of England, an adaptation of Bohumil Hrabal's classic novel of the same name. The film is proving hugely successful among Czech filmgoers, but many people have been truly captivated by the wonderful score created by Czech film composer Aleš Březina. In this week's edition of Czechs Today, I've been speaking to Aleš at the offices of the Martinů Institute in Prague, the organization he built up pretty much from scratch in 1995. I began by asking him when he knew he wanted to devote his life to music.
It was at the age of 5, it was in 1969, and I listened to the radio playing an incredibly beautiful melody. And I asked my mother, what's that for instrument? And she said, that's violin. And I asked her, what is it for a composition? And she said, that's the Nightingale, which was a film music by Václav Trojan for puppet film by Jiří Trenka. And the third question was, would I be ever able to play that? And my mother was clever enough to say yes. And then we went to the basic school, a basic artistic school, and I found a very nice violin teacher and I started violin lessons.
How long did it take for you to learn to play that piece?
I never played that. It's not that it wouldn't be playable, but at the conservatoire you have to play more serious repertoire such as Beethoven and Mozart and Bruch and so. And Václav Trojan was never recognized as being a great master of Czech classical music, at least not at that time and at least not in Pilsen. And in Pilsen, which was a highly conservative city, you had to play really serious music.
I want to talk more about your composing in a few minutes. But first of all, we're sitting here in the offices of the Martinu Institute, after the great Czech composer, Bohuslav Martinu. Both as a musician and as a composer, how much influence has Martinu had on your own work?
I would say in terms of music, he has no influence, because he wrote music for completely different occasions than I. I do write music for cinema. Martinu as well wrote one large score for a very avant-garde film in 1935, which is called the Marijka Nevěrnice, the Untruthful Marijke. But this was for him rather the exception, and whereas for me that's the rule. So it means to me more important than my love to Martinu is my love to the subject of the film and my talks to the film director. So that's what matters.
I'd like to play a piece of music now from the I Serve the King of England soundtrack. It's called Padajúce Bankovky, or Falling Banknotes. It's a very short piece of music. Just hear that now. Mentioned there that Martinu had no influence on your composing, but listening to that wonderful piece really reminds me of Martinu. Am I wrong or am I right?
You can never be wrong. So I don't know. Asking people what their music sounds like is a question for nothing, because you can hear in that how you did it, what influenced your thinking about this particular piece.
I'm thinking of the soaring violins and just the phrasing of that.
Yeah, could be. As I said, I wouldn't be able to say that, but if you say it sounds a bit like Martinu, then I'm happy, of course. Yeah.
Tell me a bit, Alex, about how you compose, the composing process for you. How does that work? Jiří Menzel asked you to compose the music for this film. How did you go about it?
We had really an immense amount of time. In case of I Served the King of England, it was 2 years. And in the space of 2 years, I composed some 2 hours of music, of which only some 35 minutes are in the film. But we had really time to reject a lot of music which wasn't bad at all, but which didn't fit to what Jiří Menzel needed. Because that was the hardest part of our discussion. As you know, Jiří Menzel is some 30 years older than me, and his experience of life, his opinions are in some cases different, and he had, of course, as everyone has, different ideas on what is calm, what is wild, what is nostalgic, what is lyric, and so on. So that we spent, I would say, more than half a year clearing these terms. So I brought some parts of music and he said, why is that so sad? And I said, it's not sad at all. So, and only after this half a year of clearing the terms, we found the way to cooperate.
When you've spent 2 years working on this body of music and you've presumably listened to it thousands of times, now that it's finished and it's out there, can you bear to listen to it anymore? Are you sick of the soundtrack of I Serve the King of England?
I wouldn't say sick. I have no need to listen to it, of course, because I know every note, and if you know that, then you see what happened in bar 3 to the horn player and how we did it with cutting. And so I don't listen to music to relax, to be honest. I listen to music to learn something new. And to me, music is completely unable to create relaxation, because I can't stop listening to the music and thinking about it, even if it's a stupid trash music. So then you still think like, oh, what is this guitar player doing for stupid things? And so I can't stop
dissecting it.
Yes. So to me, I listen to music to learn something new, to think about it in musicological terms. I listen to it not usually at the end of the day, because I like silence as much as I like music. I enjoy the silent space in my flat at the end of the day, and I prefer to listen to music on weekends or a lunch break or so. So that's the time I listen to music very, very much.
Alice Presnell, thank you very much indeed.
Composer Aleš Březina was Rob Cameron's guest in this week's Czechs Today. I'm afraid that's all we have in the program for you. I'd like to remind you that all the stories you heard today can be found on our website www.radio.cz, both in sound and text. Now, from me, Pavla Horáková, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening and tune in again soon.